She's standing at the edge of her backyard grow-out tank at 6 in the morning, a mug of coffee going cold in her hand, and she's counting, 17 of them, floating near the surface in a loose cluster, spinning slowly in the current from the small pump she'd set up the night before. 17 freshwater prawn juveniles, dead less than 12 hours after she stocked them, and she hadn't done a single thing wrong, not according to the instructions she'd printed off the internet. Float the bag for 10 minutes, release gently, done. She'd gone to bed proud of herself. This is where backyard prawn farming ends for a lot of people. Not from bad water, not from disease, from not understanding what those animals had already been through before they ever touched her water. This is the episode of Farm Fresh where we fix that. Where to find the freshwater prawn hatcheries worth calling, what they're actually doing inside those tanks to get your juveniles ready to ship, and what the first 24 to 72 hours of your grow-out season actually look like when you do it right. Because the failure I just described is not bad luck. It is a gap in the handoff, and once you understand it, it becomes completely preventable. Before we go any further, I want to mention one small detail, because it will come back. Some of the hatchery operators who have been shipping juvenile prawns for decades pack their bags with water that carries a faint tea-colored tint. Not brown, not cloudy, just a faint amber warmth in the water. Most people who notice it at all assume the bag got contaminated in transit, or that the hatchery doesn't filter well. I set my first bag down on the driveway and looked at it for a long moment before I carried it to the tank. The species almost all backyard prawn farmers work with is Macrobrachium rosenbergii, the giant river prawn, sometimes called the Malaysian prawn. Here's the thing about this animal that catches people off guard every single time. It doesn't start its life in freshwater. The larvae need brackish water to survive, not ocean salinity, but a specific chemical environment, distinct enough from your backyard pond that the gap between them is the first thing that can kill a batch. A legitimate hatchery walks those animals from brackish conditions back to freshwater over the course of their post-larval development. That transition has already happened before the animals ship to you. What arrives at your door is a juvenile that has survived its first major environmental shift, been placed in a sealed bag with limited oxygen, and then spent hours in transit while ammonia slowly builds in the water around it. The research on Macrobrachium transport is clear. Temperature increases during transit significantly accelerate oxygen consumption and nitrogen waste production. That bag is not a resting place. It is a countdown. The hatcheries worth knowing have been operating long enough to have shipped through bad weather, airline delays, and difficult customer calls. Aquaculture of Texas has been running since the mid-1980s, ships post-larvae and 30 to 60-day juveniles year-round, and routes through DFW International for domestic and international buyers. Miami Aquaculture carries post-larvae starting as young as PL1, day 1 post-larval stage, up through mature grow-out size, and also sells hatchery equipment for buyers who eventually want to produce their own stock. KT's freshwater prawns ship smaller quantities at a hobbyist-friendly scale, which makes them a sensible first call if you are not ready to order by the thousand. Live Aquaponics out of Florida carries live prawns and breeding colonies for growers in the Southeast. Shorter shipping windows reduce the stress load your animals accumulate before they reach you. When you contact a supplier for the first time, the conversation has to be about age and stage, not just price. Post-larvae are the cheapest option. They are also the hardest to manage. They need a temporary holding setup with controlled brackish water for 1 to 2 weeks after arrival before they can go into your freshwater grow-out pond. If you do not have that infrastructure on your first run, post-larvae will cost you more in losses than you saved buying them cheap. 30-day-old juveniles are the entry point for backyard beginners. You pay more per animal. You lose far fewer. On your first season, that is not a close call. Now here is where a lot of new growers make the second mistake. Right after they've figured out the supplier question, they overbuy. The first time I called to place an order, I'd done all my research. I knew my pond dimensions. I knew the rough math on stocking density for a mature grow-out pond. I told the man on the phone I wanted to stock it at near capacity from day one. He asked me how many seasons I'd run freshwater prawns. I told him this was my first. He said nothing for a moment, and then he said something I've never forgotten. Your pond isn't ready for 500 animals. You're not ready for 500 animals. Your water isn't ready either. Buy 150. Learn what your system does. Call me next spring. I was irritated for about 3 days. He was completely right. I'd have lost a significant portion of a large order in the first 2 weeks from problems I didn't know how to read yet. 100 to 250 juveniles is the right opening number for a first backyard grow-out. Not because the pond can't hold more, because you can't yet hold the knowledge a bigger number demands. That tea-colored water was sitting somewhere in the back of my mind the morning of my first acclimation, though I still didn't know what it meant. You're standing at the edge of the tank. The shipping box is open on the ground beside you. The bag is heavier than you expected, the water cold against your palms through the plastic. The juveniles inside are moving in slow arcs near the bottom, and the water around them smells faintly of ammonia. You know this. You lay the sealed bag flat on the surface of your tank, and you step back. 20 minutes. The temperature inside that bag is somewhere between 4 and 8 degrees different from your tank water, depending on how long it was in transit. The physiology of this animal does not tolerate a sudden shift. You are giving the water inside the bag time to equalize with the water in your tank while the seal holds. This is called the float step, and the instructions that say 10 minutes are wrong. 20 is the floor. Some operators recommend 30. While you wait, don't wander off. Stay with it. You'll be tempted to go do something productive. Stay with the bag. After 20 minutes, you cut the top of the bag. You do not dump it. You begin adding your tank water to the bag, a quarter cup at a time, every few minutes. You are replacing the chemistry the animals arrived in with the chemistry of their new home, slowly enough that their physiology registers it as gradual change rather than sudden shock. This takes 45 minutes to an hour. By the end, the volume in the bag has roughly doubled. You net the juveniles out carefully and transfer them to the tank. The transit water, cloudy now, ammonia loaded, gets disposed of away from your grow-out system, not down the drain beside your pond, away. Do not pour it in. In the first 6 hours, watch distribution. A healthy cohort of juveniles will spread out across the tank bottom. They'll seek cover, submerged pipe sections, plant root systems, anything that casts a shadow. They'll spar territorially, which looks alarming until you've seen it enough times to know it's normal social behavior and not a sign of distress. What requires your attention is clustering. Animals pressed at the tank wall, juveniles stacked near the surface, a group piled at the waterline in a tight mass. Most beginners see this and think the animals are acclimating, getting comfortable with their new space. This is the signal that dissolved oxygen has dropped below what they can tolerate. Before you adjust pH, before you change anything else, add aeration. Watch whether the juveniles disperse across the tank floor within 20 minutes. If they spread, oxygen was the issue, and you caught it before it became a loss. If clustering continues after aeration, check your pH. You need a range between 7, 0, and 8, 5. Outside that window, these animals decline in ways that are slow, hard to reverse, and easy to blame on shipping quality. From hour 6 through hour 24, feed lightly. A small amount of sinking pellet or finely crushed earthworm introduced in the late afternoon when prawn activity peaks naturally is enough. Don't push heavy feeding in the first day. Watch the response. Healthy juveniles move toward feed with purpose. If you see no feeding behavior in the first 24 hours, it's not automatically a crisis. Give them another 12 hours before adjusting your approach. The stress of transit often suppresses feeding response for a full day. By 72 hours, if your animals are moving freely across the tank floor, responding to feed and spacing themselves normally with typical territorial interaction between them, you have cleared the hardest window of the entire grow-out season. Most of what kills a first batch happens in this window, and almost none of it is about the quality of the animals. It is about the transition. Now, that amber tint in the shipping water, it comes from tannins, a natural organic compound that experienced hatchery operators sometimes add deliberately to the transit bag. Research on crustacean health has shown that tannins improve resistance to ammonia stress, enhance nonspecific immune function, and carry antioxidant properties that support the animal under the physiological pressure of transit. The faint tea color in the water is a functional choice, not a contamination issue. You don't need to treat it as a problem or worry about small amounts entering your tank. What it tells you, if you know what you're looking at, is that the operator who packed that bag was thinking about the hours of transit the animal would face before anyone opened it. It is not a quality guarantee, but when I see that amber tint, I know I am working with someone who understands that the shipping window is part of the grow-out process, not separate from it. That color earned my trust the year I finally understood what I was looking at. Think about that bag again. The one you're holding up to the light on shipping day, those small forms suspended in cold water waiting. That image looks different now than it did at the start. You're not just checking whether they survive transit. You're reading the water. You're reading the color. You're watching whether they're moving with purpose or drifting in tight, anxious circles. That bag is the first conversation of your grow-out season. The animals are already telling you what they've been through. Whether you hear it depends entirely on how much you've learned to slow down and look. Which brings me to the question I keep coming back to, and I want you to sit with it honestly. Some of the best backyard prawn farmers I know started with 150 juveniles. They lost 20 in the first week. They figured out why. By year two, they were running 400 animals with losses under 5% because they understood their water, their system, and every variable in between. They'd earned that confidence the slow, careful way. And some of the best I know ordered 800 juveniles on their first run, lost 200 in the first 10 days, treated those 200 as tuition, and came out the other side with a working system and 600 animals in the water. They learned fast, because the stakes were high enough to force it. Both approaches produced serious farmers. Both approaches cost money. The question is whether you believe understanding requires patience or whether you believe it requires pressure. So tell me, when it matters, do you build slow and protect every animal, or do you stock heavy and let the losses teach you fast? I don't think there's a right answer, but I think the one you choose says something true about how you learn.